And now we're looking at how close greyhound racing might be to a permanent finishing line. This week, a New Zealand bill to ban greyhound racing was read in Parliament for the first time. On the 6th of November, Tasmania introduced a bill to phase out greyhound racing in that state, and there are similar bills before the parliaments of Wales and Scotland. Of course, there was an attempt to ban greyhound racing in New South Wales in 2016. That was short-lived, but in 2025, Greyhounds New South Wales is in the process of closing 11 of the 26 tracks in New South Wales, in line with the recommendations of the recent Deloitte's Optimal Racing Footprint Report. Joining us to discuss the declining state of the greyhound racing industry is Dr. Mia Cobb, canine welfare specialist at the University of Melbourne's Veterinary School. Welcome to Sunday Extra, Dr. Cobb.
Thank you, Julian. Great to be here.
Could we start by just hearing from you your sort of overview of the greyhound racing industry in Australia today, and I suppose the state of regulation efforts across the country?
Yeah, I guess in the last couple of years, we've really witnessed this wave of places around the world recognising that, you know, it appears that I guess what we would say is current greyhound racing practices don't seem to be aligning with modern animal welfare expectations. And these places have all been considering or choosing to ban it. And it's more than just animal welfare concerns. This is very much also about social, political and economic priorities. So as you've mentioned, New Zealand, after numerous reviews, have sort of made this decision now with cross-party support to ban greyhound racing from August of next year. Scotland, again, had independent analysis completed by an Animal Welfare Commission in 2023, and that has led to them proposing legislation to ban oval track racing. Tasmania have also cited animal welfare issues, and this is actually the second state in Australia to ban after the ACT. Wales is currently considering a bill in front of their Senate, and Western Australia is seeing increasing mounting pressure there with a parliamentary inquiry and looking for reform and ban. So it's interesting you mentioned the closure of the New South Wales tracks, because in the UK, we've seen their number of racetracks has gone down over 60% since 2000. Mm. I think only 18 rather are left operating there. So you're right, we have seen an increasing efforts, I guess you could say, from the industry to try and show the public that they are doing more. But I guess what we're probably seeing, and, you know, for full disclosure, I've worked on projects for industry bodies and also for animal advocacy agencies over the last 15 years. So I really looked at this from both sides of the coin. I'd say what we've seen is not a very convincing appetite for change.
It's also interesting that, as you say, the bills in many places have got cross-party support, and they seem to have been initiated by governments of all sorts of different political colours. Are there, in your view, common tipping points for governments deciding to back bans on greyhound racing?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of a few things that have all sort of come at the same time for this issue. So one is scientific advancement. So we really understand a lot more about animals and how they experience their lives now. And we talk about animal sentience, which is acknowledging that species like dogs have feelings and experiences and social connections that matter to them. And we have the science that shows us that, you know, quite convincingly. And so with that comes, I guess, a bit of a moral obligation to not just reduce harm and suffering in their lives, but also make sure they're having those positive experiences as well. And we have a scientific framework that we call the five domains of animal welfare that looks at these experiences across four domains of nutrition, their physical environment, their health, and their behavioural interactions with people, with other animals, and also with the environment, and how all of that affects their mental state from which we are able to infer their welfare. And so this five domains model is increasingly becoming present in legislation and the way that we provide welfare for animals in our care. We've also had media exposés. So you might remember the ABC's Four Corners in 2015 showed some quite shocking footage of live baiting that was happening. And there's been several moments like that around the world, I guess, where media has shown us things that don't align with those public expectations. And we also see things like the live baiting, the culling of surplus dogs to the industry, things like that keep coming. So that defence of, oh, it was just one bad apple is no longer ringing true when we now have, you know, 10 years of the same kind of stories popping up. And that issue of wastage, so that overbreeding of dogs, the lack of traceability of them throughout their lifetime, and then the disposal of dogs that aren't used by the industry is something that I think the public find not palatable. Mm. And all these sort of things tip into what we call a loss of social license. So that's kind of the community approval for something like greyhound racing to operate. So it's not a physical license like a driver's license, but we often describe it a bit like an egg. It can erode slowly, but once it breaks, it's really hard to get it back. And we know that there's research that shows that 9 in 10 Australians agree that animal welfare should be better protected by government legislation, and there's growing understanding and recognition of animal sentience. And I guess that really is not just something that's impacting greyhound racing. So if you look across our lifetimes, you know, we used to see as kids exotic animals in circuses, and that's been phased out in Australia. We're seeing animal testing being phased out around the world. So there's lots of areas that are being impacted. Greyhounds aren't unique. Mm. Lots of things relating to animals have changed. And I guess also at this time we're seeing economic pressures. So we're seeing declining attendances on
tracks.
Well,
yes. Yeah, yeah. I wanted to ask you about that because, like, I mentioned that Deloitte's report to Greyhounds New South Wales, which talked about trying to sustain commercially viable, welfare-led and regionally responsive greyhound racing was the phrase that they used. To what extent is Australian greyhound racing commercially viable in your view? And if so, what are the key contributors to that?
Yeah, look, I'm not an economic expert.
Sure, yes. So
I'm not gonna make any big sweeping statements, but I think the proof is in the pudding, right? If they're choosing to shut down 11 tracks, that's showing us that it's not a very viable model as it's currently operating. I think we've seen, you know, this is all globally too, not just Australia specific, but generally the people turning up at the track are the people involved in racing on the track. There's not a lot of spectators anymore compared to, say, 50 years ago. We've also seen the rise of virtual racing alternatives. So people showed us during the COVID shutdowns that they're quite willing to bet on digital animation races. We don't need it to be real animals. And also I think we've got this increased cost of living, and that means that the funds that our governments are directing to these industries could perhaps serve the industry, like the community, in more tangible ways that impact more of their constituents, right? I mean, in New South Wales, I think the government has, you know, given them huge land tax exemptions for racing clubs. And, you know, to the point of, I think it's something like $60 million. And in Queensland, the taxpayers contributed about $45 million towards an $89 million greyhound racing complex that was opened this year, despite there being a 73,000 signature petition opposing it. So I think there's this little bit of a mismatch. And, you know, there's definitely been an increase in greyhound-specific or greyhound racing specific political activity too. So across those UK jurisdictions from 2019 onwards, there's been more inquiries and petitions and debates and parliamentary questions. And I think that's just showing this increased community concern for the welfare of racing greyhounds.
Yeah. We're speaking with Dr. Mia Cobb, canine welfare specialist from the University of Melbourne's Veterinary School on Sunday Extra, and it's 7:30. In terms of welfare for animals, what's your view, Mia, on how much genuine improvement there's been in the greyhound racing industry, or the extent of what's sometimes referred to as welfare washing?
Yeah, I heard you already had a great primer on washing, just with the previous speaker talking about greenwashing. But yeah, so welfare washing is where industries present false information about animal care practices to improve their public reputation. So they're appearing to take responsibility. And I think, you know, ultimately it's going to be the public and the legislators who decide, are these genuine improvements or is it welfare washing? We know that welfare washing isn't always deliberate and malicious. It can be active disinformation, but it can also just be from people who really don't know better and are doing what they think is right. And I think while that might be true at the individual participant level at times in greyhound racing, especially if they're older men who we know often think differently about animal welfare in many contexts compared to others in our community, it's harder to believe at the pointy end of the industry. So we've seen some big claims from industry. So we've seen things like in Great Britain, they put out a very large, shiny, a good life for every greyhound strategic plan. But when you scratch the surface and dig into that, many of those actions don't actually benefit greyhounds, or they weren't fully funded. They were sort of a promise. And although the plan does use that five domains framework, it doesn't actually assure positive experiences are possible for greyhounds across their life cycle. Mm. So it's sort of using the language but not providing the actions.
And Mia, you mentioned that you've worked on, you know, I suppose both sides of the equation. Based on that experience, have there been sort of substantial improvements in greyhound welfare in the racing industry in Australia?
I think it's really tricky when an industry regulates itself.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. Are there objective regulatory standards as well?
There's a lot of opacity,
right.
And there's a lot of reporting to itself, or where there's this appearance of independence, the payroll is still the same place. So I guess to some degree, this is what we think of as regulatory capture, and it's definitely not what we consider best practice in terms of animal welfare assurance. Ideally, you would have an independent regulator from a different payroll. And I would have to say at the moment, nothing I've seen fundamentally addresses the inherent risks of racing dogs around oval tracks at high speed.
Mm. And you mentioned, you know, the greater attention to the sentience of animals and the sort of what makes a good life for an animal. Do greyhounds or some greyhounds enjoy racing?
I know that's often said as a defence from the industry, is that the dogs love to race. I think the dogs love to run. I don't think they only have to do that around a racetrack.
Mm.
So I think, you know, my dogs love running too in the paddocks that I have at home, but they don't do it on a curved track, and they thankfully have not injured or died as a result of it.
Yeah, and you mentioned the curved track. I have read some things about the possibility of there being straight tracks instead. Why would that be a change that's put forward, and would it make much difference to the dog's experience in your view?
Yeah, so we know from observing all these government reviews and inquiries, and even after all the money the industry itself has poured into researching track surfaces and angles, that greyhounds that race at speed on curved tracks will continue to essentially break and die. That risk is inherent in the activity of racing a group of dogs at speed on a curved track. So when dogs race on straight tracks, we do see less catastrophic injuries, although injuries that can impact dogs from like a one-day injury and then they're recovered through to 90 days do still occur at a regular rate on straight tracks. And we've had that evidence since, you know, probably 5 years ago, but we've not seen a major response to commit to that mode of racing as the way forward. And I think part of that is to do with lack of interest from broadcasters. And that was sort of expressed somewhat.
Why would the curve of the track be particularly appealing to broadcasters?
I can't comment on that.
I've asked you about economics, now I'm asking you about television production.
Look, it is, I mean, the area that I work in is very much about people as much as about dogs, so yeah. I appreciate the breadth of the questions. But I think it's also worth noting that racing is actually a very small proportion of a greyhound's life. So just making it safer doesn't still ensure that they're living well the rest of the time from birth to retirement. There's a lot of concerns about the limited experiences they tend to get in their first year of life, which then doesn't set them up well for life as a pet later, and also the extended time they spend living in individual kennel housing.
Mm-hmm. It's been really interesting discussing the state of the greyhound racing with you, racing industry with you this morning. Mia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Julian.
That's Dr. Mia Cobb, canine welfare scientist at the University of Melbourne's Veterinary School. And on Sunday Extra, it's 35 minutes past 7.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.